talk about exactly what the U.S. can do now, Professor Chomsky.
What the U.S. can do is stop acting to prevent negotiations. For a long time, there's no time to review the record, but the position of the United States has been to try to undermine possibilities of negotiations.
Professor Chomsky, world-renowned political dissident and linguist, and Vijay Prashad, director of the Tricontinental Institute for Social Research. They've co-authored the new book, The Withdrawal, Iraq, Libya, Afghanistan, and the Fragility of U.S. Power. Noam Chomsky was speaking to us from Brazil. We'll play more of their interview later this week. That does it for our show. On Wednesday, I'll be speaking at Penn State Harrisburg at 7 p.m., and on Thursday, October 6th, at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, at 4 p.m. Democracy Now! Currently is accepting applications for two full-time jobs, an associate digital editor and a people and culture manager. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Hey, Michael here. I'm with the Tin Can Phone Podcast, a radio show where you can hear about the influence incarceration has straight from the source. We tell you the story from the inside out, so make sure to check us out on KBOO Community Radio every first Tuesday at 10 a.m.
Tune in to KBOO on Wednesday, October 5th for Dead Moon Night,
a four-hour extravaganza
celebrating the 2017 event when 1,100 rockers showed up outside Portland City Hall
to commemorate the legendary band Dead Moon in an official city proclamation of October 5th as Dead Moon Night.
Again, that's Dead Moon Night, Wednesday, October 5th, from 8 p.m. till midnight.
Here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a new report finds emotional abuse and sexual misconduct are widespread problems in women's professional soccer. Portland City Commissioner Mingus Maps unveils his alternative to the charter change ballot measure. And in international news, a Nobel Prize is awarded to a scientist who pioneered DNA extraction from early humans. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, October 3rd, 2022. I'm Michelle Coppola. Abuse, misconduct, and cover-ups are more widespread in the professional women's soccer world than previously known. An independent investigation into the National Women's Soccer League found that emotional abuse and sexual misconduct were systemic in the sport across a number of teams, coaches, and players. The investigation began after two former Portland Thorns players, Mana Shim and Sinead Farrelly, came forward with allegations of harassment and sexual coercion from former Thorns coach Paul Riley. The Thorns investigated the allegations against their head coach in 2015 and decided not to renew his contract as a result. They found evidence of misconduct towards these players, plus sexism towards other players and fixation on his players' weight. The Thorns determined he didn't break the law, but they didn't disclose to other teams in the league why they parted ways. Five of the 10 head coaches across the league have either been fired or stepped down after allegations of misconduct. Top Thorns officials are accused of attempting to get in the way of the investigation. That's according to the report. The report goes on to write that the Portland Thorns owner Merritt Paulson and president of soccer Gavin Wilkinson enabled former coach Riley's abuse of their players and protected him in the aftermath. The report turned up a number of exchanges between these two and other managers and coaches in the league, always speaking highly of Riley and encouraging others to hire him. The investigation found no evidence that the Thorns actually told the Flash, the team Riley moved to, that he was let go for a reason. President of soccer Gavin Wilkinson even told the manager at the Flash that Paul was, quote, put in a bad position by the player and that he would hire him back in a heartbeat. The report recommends reforms to the National Women's Soccer League to address these systemic problems that the league has with coercion. They say that teams must accurately disclose coach misconduct to the rest of the league so coaches can't move between teams. It also calls for better vetting of coaches and timely investigations into abuse allegations. The Portland Thorns are expected to comment on the report later today. Portland City Commissioner Mingus Mapps has revealed his alternative plan for reshaping Portland City government. He's hoping to pull support away from the current charter reform measure. The current ballot measure is Measure 26228. It would implement some important changes to city government if voters pass it this November. It would expand the city council to 12 members, and it would create four districts across the city where folks would elect three representatives from each district. The city council would appoint a city manager to run the city's bureaus, and voters would be able to use ranked choice voting in city elections. A recent poll showed that nearly two-thirds of Portlanders support the charter change amendment. Commissioner Mapps, however, has been vocal about opposing the current ballot measure, saying that it's too much, too fast. But at the same time, he does support getting rid of Portland's peculiar commission form of government. He's unveiled his proposal, which could be referred to the voters in the May 2023 ballot, if city commissioners back it. One major difference in Mapp's plan would be dividing the city into seven districts, each electing one representative. His plan would also allow the mayor to veto policy passed by the city council and scraps ranked choice voting. Mapp says ranked choice voting could be implemented, but in a separate ballot measure. Mapp cites the strain on the city budget as one reason to have less councilors. The city budget office estimates that the current charter reform measure would only cost 0.14% of the city budget and potentially save money for the city in its small donor elections program, since the May primary won't be necessary. Ranked choice voting allows for an automatic runoff process, so voters don't need to send in their ballot twice to assert their favorite candidate. The system can do it automatically. That means two campaigns and their costs won't be necessary. The charter measure on the ballot for November is supported by numerous civil rights and racial justice organizations who see Measure 26228 as a way for more underrepresented communities to have a seat on the council. Ballots with Measure 26228 will be mailed to voters in 2 weeks for the November election. Rescue operations continue as floodwaters rise in Florida, and protests continue worldwide in support of women in Iran. With more on those stories, it's Catherine Carley with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
It is imperative that we get kids back in school to return to normalcy so that we can get back to teaching and learning and get the community back in their regular routine.
Recovery efforts from Hurricane Ian continue in Florida, where State Education Commissioner Manny Diaz said superintendents are consolidating resources to reopen schools. The death toll from the storm rose to at least 80 as floodwaters continued to rise in some areas. Hundreds of thousands of people remain without power. Residents in Orlando have been told to conserve water. Meanwhile, in Puerto Rico, power has been restored to more than 90% of the island following damage from Hurricane Fiona more than 2 weeks ago. President Joe Biden and First Lady Jill Biden will travel there on Monday. They'll visit Florida on Wednesday. In more than a dozen U.S. cities, protests continued over the death of Mahsa Amini, the 22-year-old Iranian Kurdish woman who died while in police custody for not properly covering her hair. The Biden administration announced it wants to provide technical workarounds for people in Iran, since that government has largely shut down the internet. Pope Francis appealed to Russian President Vladimir Putin to stop the spiral of violence and death in Ukraine. The pontiff devoted his entire Sunday message to the matter.
Indeed, this terrible and inconceivable wound to humanity, instead of healing, continues to shed even more blood.
Meanwhile, Ukraine took back full control of the eastern city of Lyman, a strategic transportation hub, and 9 NATO member states in Eastern and Central Europe are backing Ukraine's bid to join the security organization. A federal judge upheld Georgia's election laws despite a lawsuit filed by Fair Fight Action, the voting rights group founded by the state's Democratic gubernatorial nominee, Stacey Abrams. The group argued that Georgia's absentee ballot policies were racially discriminatory and violated Georgia voters' constitutional rights. The state requires that names and addresses on voters' IDs be an exact match with voter registration records.
I, Ketanji Brown Jackson, do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Finally, the Supreme Court begins a new term Monday. Ketanji Brown Jackson will take her place as the first African-American woman justice. Cases before the court include a challenge to the use of affirmative action in college admissions and another which contends an Alabama electoral map diminished the power of black voters. The court begins with a case that could determine the EPA's ability to uphold clean water standards. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators for transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Florida and Puerto Rico are continuing their efforts to recover from Hurricane Fiona and more recently Hurricane Ian. That's complicated by the fact that climate change makes rainfall and storm surges much more severe. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on that story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. During a hurricane, torrential rains can cause dangerous flooding. Roads turn into rivers, and stranded residents flee to their rooftops. Stephanie Herring of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says that as the climate warms, rainfall during hurricanes is growing more extreme.
It is likely that greenhouse warming is going to cause hurricanes in the coming century to be more intense globally and have those higher rainfall rates than present-day hurricanes.
Herring explains that the warming atmosphere can hold more water. She compares it to a sponge.
In a cooler atmosphere, a sponge can only hold so much water. In a warmer atmosphere, that sponge can just hold more water. And so as you wring that sponge out, you're capable of getting some of those more extreme precipitation events.
Meanwhile, powerful storm surge can cause ocean water to barrel ashore, flooding coastal communities. And rising seas are driving storm surges higher. Flooding and storm surges cause more than 3/4 of hurricane-related deaths in the U.S. So as rainfall and storm surges intensify, the devastation caused by hurricanes is expected to grow, and people and communities need to prepare. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
The United States' lax policy on pesticides is playing into trade talks with other countries that have much stronger protections against chemicals. Eric Tegedoff has more.
As the United States enters into talks over a new trade framework with several nations, America's lax pesticide policy could be a sticking point for many countries. The Indo-Pacific Economic Framework involves more than a dozen countries and has 4 negotiating pillars, including decarbonization and anti-corruption. Christina Stucker-Gossi is with the Northwest Center for Alternatives to Pesticides. She says large agribusiness companies in the pesticide industry typically have outsized influence when it comes to being part of the policymaking process.
It's kind of just a fact of economics. They have more money in the game, and that means they have more skin in the game. And a lot of times that means that the policies in place are built to support their view of things.
Stucker-Gossi says many countries use a so-called precautionary principle where pesticides with disputed or unknown effects on human health are not approved. She says that is not the case in the U.S. Steve Supan of the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy says the use of pesticides already affects trade with some of the countries in the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework.
Some of the IPEF countries have pesticide policies that are rejecting U.S. imports that have pesticide residues on horticulture and grain exports.
However, he predicts companies will call for the elimination of zero-tolerance policies on pesticides, arguing they'll disrupt the delivery of food. Stucker Gossie says states like Oregon already are taking stronger action on some pesticides. In 2020, it was among the first states to ban chlorpyrifos, a chemical with damaging effects on young children's brain development. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency followed suit in 2021. Stucker Gossie says after years of ubiquity, a reconsideration of pesticides is underway.
It's nice to see that people are taking a second look and thinking for themselves after decades and decades of heavily marketing these products. And hopefully, moving forward, we can have a healthier, more public safety approach.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News In Depth. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, Prison Pipeline. Then at 7 p.m., let's talk about race. Tonight's weather going to be clear with a low of 55 degrees. Tomorrow's weather, a little bit cooler than it has been. We'll have some potential clouds, but it'll still be warm with a high of 75. Today in history, in 1949, WERD opened in Atlanta. It was the first black-owned radio station in the United States. The quote of the day is from American Reverend Al Sharpton, who was born on this day in 1954. He said, quote, "If you can get the proper definition of trouble, then we can find out who the real troublemakers are." The Nobel Prize in Medicine was awarded to the scientist responsible for developing new techniques to compare the DNA of modern humans to those of our ancestors. KBOO's Josh Salem has more.
Swedish scientist Svante Paabo won the Nobel Prize in Medicine today. Paabo spearheaded the development of new techniques that allowed researchers to better compare the underlying genetic makeup of modern humans and ancestral species, also known as hominins. By recognizing that DNA can be preserved for tens of thousands of years and developing ways to extract it, Paabo and his team created a completely new way to answer questions about our past. He made discoveries on human evolution that provide insights into our immune system and what makes us different from Neanderthals and another primitive group, the Denisovans. Modern humans and Neanderthals diverged as a species around 800,000 years ago. While Neanderthal bones were first discovered in the mid-19th century, scientists had to examine their DNA to fully understand the links between them and us. The Nobel Committee noted Paabo and his team found that gene flow had occurred from Neanderthals to Homo sapiens, demonstrating that they had children together during periods of coexistence. The transfer of genes between different hominin species affects how the immune system of modern humans reacts to infections, such as the coronavirus. Paabo and his team extracted DNA from a tiny finger bone found in a cave in Siberia, also leading to the recognition of a new species of ancient humans they called Denisovans. Denisovan genes have been found in up to 6% of modern humans in Asia and Southeast Asia, indicating that interbreeding occurred there as well. People outside Africa also have 1 to 2% of Neanderthal genes. By mixing with other hominins after migrating out of Africa, Homo sapiens picked up sequences that improved their chances to survive in their new environments. For example, Tibetans share a gene with Denisovans that helps them adapt to high altitude. Paabo's discovery showed that Neanderthals and Denisovans are sister groups, which split from each other around 600,000 years ago. Paabo, 67, performed his prize-winning studies in Germany at the University of Munich and at the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology in Leipzig. Paabo's father won the Nobel Prize in Medicine in 1982. This is the eighth time that the son or daughter of a Nobel laureate also won a Nobel Prize. The Medicine Prize kicked off a week of Nobel announcements. It continues this week with the Physics, Chemistry, and Literature Prizes, as well as the prestigious 2022 Nobel Peace Prize. The prizes carry a cash award of about $900,000. The money comes from a bequest left by the prize's creator, Swedish inventor Alfred Nobel, who died in 1895. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
Oscar trailblazer Sasheen Littlefeather has died from cancer at age 75. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Actress Sasheen Littlefeather, who famously refused the Oscar on behalf of Marlon Brando in 1973, has passed away, her family announced in a press statement. Her death comes just 2 weeks after the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences publicly apologized to Littlefeather and officially acknowledged the mistreatment and misrepresentation of Native Americans by the film industry. Littlefeather was boycotted by Hollywood, personally attacked and harassed after she gave a 60-second speech at the 45th award ceremony, refusing Brando's honor for his role in The Godfather. The night in September in Hollywood was for reflection and healing. Littlefeather says she stood up for Native rights for all Native people.
It was critical for the psyche of all our relations to bring awareness to and interrupt the negative interpretation and representation of Native American people by the film, television, and sports industries.
The event drew more than 800 people. Some remember watching Littlefeather make history on TV, while others have seen archived video. Many say it was a monumental moment on television for Native people. Anthony Morales is chief of the San Gabriel Band of Mission Indians.
You know, what it took her to do 50 years ago kind of inspires me, because for that tribe, I'm the one that likes to go out and challenge developers and always for our people, and everything I do is for our people, not only for my own people, but for all our ancestors.
Chef Crystal Wapipaw provided food for a private reception.
The apology means a lot, like when it comes to especially me being a Native chef, and especially her. To me personally, I feel like it's long overdue, but also it's her way of a gift to all of us.
Native creatives in Hollywood, both older and younger generations, say Littlefeather made an impact. Actress Devery Jacobs of Reservation Dogs.
Seeing Sasheen, it's like anti-Sasheen. She is like somebody who has been on my television, who I've been watching clips of YouTube since I was like a little girl. And she's even framed on my bedroom, on my bathroom wall. And so for her to stand up and stand with her community all across the theater, just it meant so much. And it was just like so hard to hold back tears.
Actor Zahn McLaren of Reservation Dogs and Dark Winds.
She was one of our first that got up and that was involved politically and made Native Americans recognized within the film business. She was one of the first, along with the, you know, Will Sampsons and, you know, the Chief Dan Georges and stuff, you know, Jay Silverheels. Sasheen came along and I think opened up some doors for people and made a lot of people realize what was going on, especially in the early 70s with Wounded Knee and the American Indian Movement.
A letter of apology was read at the event, which was sent to Littlefeather by the Academy in June. At a media roundtable, Littlefeather said of the apology that she was shocked and very fortunate to still be alive to see it. She added, "It's never too late for an apology, and it's never too late for forgiveness." Littlefeather died of cancer at age 75 on Sunday in California. The Federal Emergency Management Agency is continuing to work with tribes on recovery efforts from Hurricane Ian, which hit Florida last week. A major disaster declaration for the Seminole Tribe of Florida was approved last week, which makes federal funding available for housing and home repairs, low-cost loans to cover uninsured property losses, and other programs to help individuals and business owners recover from the disaster. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Depression Screening Day is this Thursday, October 6th, and according to the National Alliance on Mental Health, 1 in 5 Americans experience depression, and 40% don't seek treatment. Brett Pivetto has more on depression screenings and treatment in Illinois.
With many people still struggling in the wake of the pandemic, this week's National Depression Screening Day is a reminder to Illinoisans to take stock of their mental health. The National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, reports the average delay between the onset of mental illness symptoms and treatment is 11 years. October 6th is Depression Screening Day, and Mark Heierman with Mental Health America of Illinois says screenings often help people realize they have a medical condition.
Depression screening is an important tool to help people find out if they have depression. People often don't know that they're depressed. They just may think that their feelings are normal or that they may not know that they have a treatable condition.
NAMI statistics indicate that 1 in 5 U.S. adults experiences mental illness each year and about 4 in 10 don't seek treatment. Mental Health America has a free online mental health screening website at screening.mhanational.org. Depression's impact on the country as seen through NAMI statistics shows people who live with depression are at a 40% higher risk of developing cardiovascular and metabolic diseases, and 70% of young people in the juvenile justice system have a diagnosable mental health condition. Heierman says depression is one of the costliest diseases in the world.
The World Health Organization has consistently ranked depression as one of the top 5 in terms of the burden of disease, which is this category that they use to measure the cost of various illnesses, including mental illnesses. And depression is always among the most costly illnesses in the world, and certainly here in Illinois and the United States.
Heierman adds Mental Health America's screening website, created in 2014, screens for 10 different mental health conditions. He says use of the website picked up after the pandemic.
For the first number of years after we started providing this on our website, a few 100,000 people a year were screening for depression and various other serious mental health conditions. And when the pandemic hit, that went up to several million a year. So now more than 16 million people have been screened for depression on our website.
He says the screening is evidence-based, anonymous, and free. For Illinois News Connection, I'm Brett Pivoteau.
Experts say that a more diverse nursing workforce improves access to care. Mary Sherman has more on the importance of culturally responsive health care in Ohio.
Nurses are on the forefront of patient outcomes, and experts say a workforce that better reflects the population it serves can help reduce health care disparities. In Ohio, people of color are underrepresented in the nursing workforce. The percentage of nursing school graduates who are Black or Hispanic is lower than the percentage of the general population. Associate Provost at Chamberlain University, Dr. Kenya Beard, has studied the issue of improving diversity in the nursing profession.
Diversity among health professionals is associated with improved access to care, and the two overarching issues is access and quality. So greater patient choice and satisfaction when we have a diverse workforce is better patient-clinician communication.
Beard notes that diversity is multidimensional and includes race, ethnicity, socioeconomic factors, and gender. For example, men represent only 12% of nurses. Beard says improving diversity in the profession starts with a more inclusive learning environment. She explains that when students see themselves represented among the faculty, they realize a nursing degree is something they can achieve as well. Beard explains that unconscious attitudes among medical professionals can impact patient outcomes. For example, because of their own life experience, a nurse might assume incorrectly that a patient has the resources to drive to a pharmacy and purchase a medication when they leave a hospital.
When you bring people into a learning environment that have different experiences, not just based on race, but based on socioeconomic factors as well, these different experiences create a rich, robust dialogue that helps everyone understand how these social determinants of health impact patient outcomes.
Beard adds that with culturally responsive teaching, nursing educators strengthen students' ability to recognize and respond in an inclusive way to diverse perspectives.
When these students graduate, they are better positioned to have a conversation with patients and their colleagues in a way that really reflects cultural humility and a greater degree of understanding the difficulties of navigating healthcare and achieving your best level of health.
Chamberlain University, which has locations in Columbus and Cleveland, has what's called a social determinants of learning model. Beard says it addresses disparities and expands opportunities by focusing on barriers to student success, including economic, housing, and transportation insecurity, and psychosocial health. For Ohio News Connection, I'm Mary Sherman.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, October 3rd, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, the producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Automation. Special thanks to Catherine Carly, Eric Tegedoff, Brett Pivetto, Antonio Gonzalez, Mary Sherman, and Dr. Anthony Lysowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, at K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola. All of our KBOO programs, including Evening News, are supported by our members, people just like you. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, it's a beautiful thing to do. Just go to kboo.fm/give. Or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. Have a great night.
Because it's KBOO time! KBOO time! Get KBOO'd up! Get KBOO'd up! Because it's KBOO time! KBOO time!
Our system is, in too many ways, broken.
The way we see the world shapes the way that we treat it.
This is Making Contact.
I'm Salima Hamrani, and on today's Making Contact, we're talking about the ways our health and the environments we live in are deeply linked.
Cool. So this is our kind of compound area.